Welcome to For Good Measure, an interview series celebrating diverse composers and other creative artists, sponsored by a grant from the California Arts Council. I'm Nanette McGinnis, Artistic Executive Director of Ensemble for These Times. Today we continue our interview with E4TT Assistant Director and For Good Measure cover art designer, Brennan Stokes. Who would you consider your mentors, or who are you listening to today?
My mentors, I was able to study with Dr. Lynn Wheeler in my undergraduate degree. And he was a man of few words, but he was always able to kind of meet me halfway with understanding kind of my and really redoing my piano technique. I think, you know, growing up in a house with kind of thinner walls and being a self-conscious young pianist, you know, you don't want anyone to hear you practice.
Yes.
Don't listen to anything, you know, because all, you know, your parents love you. And so it's always going to, for the most part, you know, they're going to say, oh, so I want to hear you play. Oh, it sounds so nice. And then, of course, in the hypercritical young classical musician that I was already, you know, it's like, you don't want to hear, it's not the finished product. So I always had a very kind of lighter touch that he recognized and was able to kind of, to shift me into, you know, weighted arms and getting, you know, get in beyond the, just the, yes, the key technically has a stopping point, but you want to kind of play, you know, beyond the depth, beyond the stopping point of the piano. And also kind of helped with a visualization kind of with that weight. Kind of the, to truly imagine that, like, this, you can kind of see the sound, you know, kind of exit the bottom of the keyboard. And I think kind of using sound and kind of bridging sounds together, especially to create, I think, even smooth dynamic changes, or, you know, creating that a vocal line on the piano, enhancing a melodic line. So that it doesn't maybe sound quite as percussive, even if it's loud and even if it is fast, there's still a way to make things sing on the piano by using kind of a really nice touch. So I'm really grateful that he was able to kind of get those ideas into me. And then Asher Raboy was my first composition professor. Just really, really accepting of the kind of the wide variety of the four of us that were in that first composition class together. And, you know, just really just being so supportive and just so fun in helping us and giving us space to talk about our music and the music of our fellow classmates, just very openly and honestly and having fun. And kind of he always gave us a sense that we were all kind of learning together. Even though he was the professor. And it was also really fun to be able to, because he was, I think, the music director of the Napa Valley Symphony for 20 plus years, and had written several pieces for them and a piano concerto. And it was really, really great to be able to go to his kind of farewell concert of his music and turn pages for the pianist, who's resounding left foot almost took mine off during a very intense part of the cadenza. And that was a moment where I learned very quickly to tuck my right foot behind the other.
That's very funny, because you've done a lot of page turning for us, but I don't think it's been quite as hazardous.
So that was a lot of fun. And I was able to study with David Garner at the SF Conservatory of Music and be in his studio for 2 years. And David definitely challenged me and opened my mind, his knowledge of text and musicality. I think he really opened my mind to the sense of even time within text.
Mm.
And the first thing I ever wrote at the conservatory was a song cycle. And the first poem that I ever set had four stanzas, and I was going through, and I was just, you know, excited to kind of set the text, and I was going and going and going, and I had finally gotten There was a few bars between the second and third stanza, and I remember he immediately kind of stopped the playback, and he's like, "Wait, wait, wait, hold on, hold on." He's like, "You just gave us something really lovely." He's like, "But also, but then we just jump into this straight away." And I was like, "Yeah, what's the problem?" And he's like, "But hold on." He's like, "Well, look at the text." He's like, "Well, the second stanza ends here, and then the third stanza opens up violet now." In veil upon veil of evening. And he's like, "You have to notice there's been a time change." And my brain just about exploded to realizing, like, oh, duh. These mind-blowing revelations over things that were, right in front of my face. But he just had such a keen observation and attention to detail about everything. Mm-hmm. And but was from day one that I remember that first meeting with him in his office, him saying, "All right, so you're here for you got in. Now what do you want to do?" And it was just he always wanted to know what projects, and always give me very realistic timelines for any larger projects I had in mind. And because he's written near about everything for large, small, solo. So he is a man that knows what realistic timetables look like and the process it takes to get there. So it was just really wonderful to be able to have someone also tell me up front, "I want you to write your music to the best of your ability." He's like, "And it's my job to weed out anything that I think sounds derivative or if you're copying,
Excellent.
It's like so he was just from day one was very upfront about making sure that my time with him was spent refining my voice and growing as my own composer, and was always always said, he's like, "I will have many comments and observations to give to you." He's like, "And my only kind of requirement that I would like to have you do is that between lessons, any comments that I make, to at least try it." And he's like, "Not that you have to do it, and not that it's going to be the end product, but just try it out." And I think in all but maybe one instance, he was absolutely right about his comments and observations about, "Oh, this needs a little longer," or "I'm not quite convinced about maybe the harmony that's being used here. Is this maybe the right sequence of things?" He just has a really brilliant intuition about musicality and order and kind of all aspects of music. And more often than not, even if in the moment I might have felt, sometimes a little like, it's like, "Oh, but I like that." You go back to the piece and you try something else out. And even if it wasn't his exact suggestion, it would spur on a new creative door would open that I hadn't thought of before. And it definitely it made for a much better piece by the end. And he was also one to suggest, save everything, save versions of the files of the pieces you make, because like I mentioned earlier, these audio recordings, I still have the audio recording that I had made of that first time I was sketching out that very first song for my very first piece in grad school that I was very excited to write. And I listened to it, I think a few weeks ago I found it. Mm-hmm. And I was, there the kind of the essence of it was the same, but there was, you listen back and go, "Wow, that's where it started." And it's fun to watch a piece and to develop and kind of leave yourself even your own history of a piece to go back to and kind of see, where it started, what stayed, what left, what changed, to where it is, to have it be by the end. And David's also again very wise, although nerve-wracking experience for a composer, especially those of us who are performers or kind of active musicians first, where we're so used to, I think, doing things ourselves, performing things ourselves. And his not hard and fast rule, but very, very heavily suggested of you as a composer, you have to be in the seat in the audience for the performance. find other performers to play your music because, you know, as educational and eye-opening as our personal lessons were, I mean, the other half of really learning about composing that he was right was you handing your piece of music, your brainchild, over to a real-life musician that is not you, who is not going to maybe intuitively understand what it is you want it to sound like,
Right.
and have them look at the music and go, "What's this?" Or like, or you know, the moment of like, "Oh yeah, well, okay." And I always told my musicians, my performers, you know, please, like, I am giving this to you. If there's something wrong, if there's something not intuitive, please tell me. Like, do not hold back on, you know, like if this is your area of expertise, like I need to know what's working, what's not working. And you know, half of what I was able to even learn further was because of taking David's advice and suggestion of always finding performers to rehearse, to look over your music, to be able to tell you, hey, this isn't quite working, or this isn't quite idiomatic, technically, this isn't comfortable. Even down to matters of engraving of, you know, if there were, you know, kind of courtesy accidentals needed, or if there were too many courtesy accidentals given, if there's a, you know, especially, you know, things like page turns,
Oh gosh, yes.
that moment where you realize, oh, right, it's not just like a, you can't just with the turn it with your mind. You're not going to have your own page turner on stage for you. Yeah, David was just an immense source of just wisdom and a very generous giver of pearls of wisdom, week in, week out.
Sounds like it was great. I've certainly heard that he's a fabulous teacher. I know him as a composer, but that matches everything I've heard. And what are you listening to nowadays?
Nowadays, it's actually, I'm kind of almost circling back to solo piano repertoire and almost kind of getting around to composers that I didn't get around to in my undergrad, or particularly investing in Latin classical composers. And while I had done, you know, my fair share of listening to Albéniz and Granados and de Falla, kind of the big three Spanish from Spain, realizing that like I have, you know, music by Villa-Lobos and Gina Serra and other Latin composers that are not Spanish, and realizing like I don't quite rem like I can't recall some of the pieces, and I'm just floored. I've just been so floored and inspired by Gina Serra and Villa-Lobos specifically. The Brazilian rhythms are intense and a little mind melting to kind of follow along in the score with the layers of rhythm that are being required of the pianist. And I think I think the great folk nature of Gina Serra has been a blast, and the Latin rhythms never fail to entertain and confuse and make the head spin a little bit in the most awesome of ways. And a recent for me actually discovery was this Venezuelan woman pianist composer Teresa Carreño, and just doing a little bit of digging on her, she's just So she was a tour de force of just this figure. She was a composer, pianist, soprano, who I think was born in 1853, and I think died maybe in the late 1910s. But she, I think, kind of the from what I remember, she moved to New York, I think, as a teen. She met Gottschalk within a couple weeks of being there, and he heard her perform and was like an active promoter of her. She, I think, eventually went to Europe, and she met, and I think even studied voice with Rossini. She had a bit of an active, even like opera career. She concertized, she played for Abraham Lincoln in the White House. I think Woodrow Wilson as well. So I mean, she had just the most extensive performance career as a pianist, as a soprano. She's got, about 70 works for, you know, she has quite a few, quite a lot of solo piano. She's got a serenade for strings, a string quartet, some vocal music. So I've been sitting here, especially these last couple of weeks, just really kind of doing a little bit of a dive on her music and, you know, just really just almost being upset that I haven't heard of her before.
Nor I, my gosh, please send some of her stuff to me for us to program.
Oh, absolutely. It's it's been such a joy to see, you know, a Venezuelan woman be such a prominent figure in the mid to late 19th century. And I think she was even at one point kind of dubbed the Valkyrie of the piano. So, I mean, I think especially, from a historical standpoint, to be dubbed a Valkyrie of the piano when you, I think she met Liszt and several other kind of, again, just, I mean, the composers of real lore and fame and in our world of classical music, and to have had such an amazing career. I think she might have also been the a composition professor to Edward McDowell, famous American composer, who I think he dedicated his second piano concerto to. So just to realize that this woman, this Latin woman, has had such an immense and successful career and been such an influence to, you know, to three continents worth of audiences is truly just it's amazing. And then again, just there's a little bit of upsetting that, like, I at least to my knowledge, she is not a figure that is more widely known about.
It's stunning and sad. And I feel the same way. I mean, she sounds like she was important and impressive and had a major career and very influential. And I don't think I've heard of her. And I've got pretty decent historical chops as well. So how did you find out about her? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was funny. I was just kind of even doing a quick Google search on just, you know, kind of famous Latin composers. And her name popped up and I was like, her photo, you know, looked of the age of the mid to late 1800s. And right. So I figured, you know, I was very happily surprised to see her face pop up and her name, you know, and I wasn't quite sure what I was about to discover. And then, you know, lo and behold, there's this incredible Venezuelan woman who's just as involved in the world of Granados and Tchaikovsky and that this whole time, this really magical time in music.
Yeah.
And to see it, even I think in short form, her just miraculous life of touring and concertizing across, you know, the kind of the Eastern Seaboard, Venezuela, and Europe.
Wow,
is just so inspiring.
Absolutely, so glad you're investigating her, and I can't wait.
Thank you for listening to For Good Measure. And a special thank you to our guest, Brennan Stokes, for joining us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to our podcast by clicking on the subscribe button and support us by sharing it with your friends, posting about it on social media, and leaving us a rating and a review. To learn more about E4TT, our concert season online and in the Bay Area, or to make a tax-deductible donation, please visit us at www.e4tt.org. This podcast is made possible in part by a grant from the California Arts Council and generous donors like you. For Good Measure is produced by Nanette McGinnis and Ensemble for These Times and designed by Brennan Stokes, with special thanks to co-producer and audio engineer Stephanie M. Newman. Remember to keep supporting equity in the arts and tune in next week for Good Measure.